Welcome to episode 196 of the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. And it's another corker.
I know when I die, I'll be lamented as, oh, how great he was on the radio. Stop giving me awards, give me radio shows.
Danny Baker has another explosion of what he calls relentless content. I love that. And former Ofcom regulator Martin Campbell sets fire to the government's new proposals about commercial radio.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. Thank you for the kind messages about last week's interviews with Chelsea Norris and Ashley Byrne. We'll try and keep the standards up this week, starting backstage at the Cambridge Junction, where multi-award-winning broadcaster, screenwriter, author and now stand-up Danny Baker was on his nationwide tour. Now, he's probably one of our most celebrated radio stars. But apart from his 2 hours on BBC Radio 5 Live once a week, he can't get on the radio. We'll talk about why. And of course, we'll play the sausage sandwich game.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
So Danny, unlike most broadcasters, you've now got to see what your audience is like.
Yeah.
What sort of people are they?
They are they're nothing if not a bootlicking entourage. No, it's one has actually impacted on the other there, because despite reputation, I can't get work in radio at all anywhere. And there's a part of that just says, well, you know what? Then I will go out and we won't have microphones in the way and just do it. And I've got to say, even though this is not like the radio show, there's a tremendous reaction whenever I mention the sausage sandwich game, which is on the Saturday mornings. But this is somewhere between the books and the radio. And it only came out of the idea when I was promoting the books and stuff. I started doing things like the Cheltenham Book Festival and this other thing in London. I noticed people were good enough to turn up, like 1,000 people. And after one of them, somebody mentioned they'd pay to get in. I was astounded.
You are, of course, in the big venue tonight, Junction 1, whereas Ian Lee was only in Junction 2.
Was he?
How does that make you feel?
As a more vintage performer, as the grand old man of radio, that's only right and fitting. It's taken them a bit by surprise, if I might be unabashed. We've sold out pretty much every... opened up the Leeds City Varieties, where they did the good old days. And I promise you, and the road manager you met a moment ago will tell you, I was sitting in that dressing room 5 minutes before we went on, and I said, you know what, if I can't do this like the radio, I have no idea what to say when we go out. And people say, oh, come on, you must do. And we had a spine of photos, but we never get round to them. Not really, do some of them. Because I've like a Swiss Army knife, like my career's been, suddenly, just as I was going to wind things down and start retiring in June, this has popped up, and it's I don't know why I didn't do this before.
So you cut to the chase in your very first sentence to me when you said you can't get on the radio.
No.
Now, every time people talk about great broadcasters in the UK, they talk about you. You got a mention on the media show today on Radio 4 as an example of a great presenter alongside, Kenny Everett and all the usual suspects. And yet, you can't get on the radio. Is that because you're a bit toxic, that people think that you'll have a rant?
No, because there's nothing in, apart from that one time at BBC London, which came post being got rid of, I wasn't, not because of it. I feel like I'm rusting away every day I don't do a radio show. Nobody will give them to us, but I think it's a matter of ceding power. And I think the more that people get churned out of media schools, the more people it takes to make a radio show, the less they want somebody coming in 10 minutes before it starts and says, look, it's fine, I can do this, all sit down and relax, and they can't. And I've had two or three tremendously unsuccessful dances with Radio 2. And they don't get me, and I don't get them. And yet you'd think I'd be a shoe-in for them. Here's someone who knows everything. He's been at the heart of music for 4 decades. I've been doing this racket 41 years, broadcasting. And you think with what I know, and you think that the track record of the shows, but nope, they just did not like me at all, even though the audience said tended to. But it was all this, what are you going to say? What are you going to play? If I got run over by a steamroller now, Trevor, I'm going to say, oh, he was great. Like Peel, he dies, they name a wing in a building after him. Actually, when he was alive, they moved him onto One in the Morning. But, the record show, I was let go by local radio.
I can remember your first, I think it was your first radio show back at GLR, when you came in, and I remember that you stood up. This was the thing. One had ever done that
I
before.
I still do sometimes.
And you had this glint in your eye. And ever since then, I've thought, of all the things he does, all the telly chat shows and the books and the screenwriting and all that, This is the thing that really floats your boat.
It's the best thing I do. It's by far the best thing I do. This is a pretty good substitute coming out and just doing it like this. I had genuinely, I mean, I can imagine I frightened the life out of you and Matthew Bannister.
You certainly did.
But that said, the content, if you can get past the idea, well, you know, it doesn't seem to be, that's probably the problem. It doesn't tick any of the boxes that you're supposed to be doing. And yet, it seems to, certainly when I did the BBC London show, it represented that in spirit, that what the capital is more than any amount of their getting on a double-decker bus and going to the Haringey and talking about, you know, devil dogs or gangs. But if you've got a management and a setup that requires input to it, they won't let you do it. But I will, you know, I cannot ever see myself being back in radio.
Talk radio, though, Danny?
No.
Did they speak to you?
Nobody. It's not a matter of, like, looking for the right
offer. I'm amazed to hear that.
I have not had a single... I mean, I was working in local radio, remember, you know, even though it was winning all the awards and you get the Radio Hall of Fame. I was in the Radio Hall of Fame a week after the explosion of BBC London. And yet there's this idea that he's dangerous. No, I'm dangerous to their careers, not to an audience and not to a radio station. But every day I don't do a radio show, I do feel like I'm rusting away. You give me a microphone now and say, you've got 3 hours, I'll do it, but it doesn't seem to fit anywhere. And yet I know when I die, I will be lamented as, oh, how great he was on the radio. Stop giving me awards, give me radio shows
you
to do.
You did get scarred, didn't you, by that podcast experience with your all-day breakfast show. And that was possibly, I'd argue, because you're a bit quick into that world. Now you could do podcast.
Nobody will pay you, Trevor. I won't do it again. People keep saying, oh, you could do that, but you worked for the first 6 months. No, I'm 60 this year. I'm not working for nothing. I'm not some kid looking for a break. Let me, you know, my track record and everything else speak for itself. Problem is I won't go cap in hand or... But even so, I don't get offered any radio work, nothing. And, you know, just looking again, going back to the BBC London thing, you've got BBC London, right? A perennially underperforming station, a bit moribund, always has been. But you've got a fellow who's won every radio award there is, widely acknowledged to be one of the best broadcasting radio, one of the best-known Londoners of the last three decades. His life story would be made in a television show.
And a very good one.
Thank you. After doing so many lousy television shows, about time we did a good one. And every box is ticked, he's evaluated, and he wants to... No, we choose not to use him. That was a perverse decision. I don't know what that was about. It was the best numbers on the station. It was in the 3 to 5 spot, dead spot in the afternoon. And for very little money compared to what you can get with everyone. What was that about? And until the day I die, I will be a thorn in their side. I will not go quietly into that radio night. I did not go quietly into it. In microcosm, that put the tin hat on whatever disrespect or fear the radio industry has in me.
Now, is it because you actually were a bit expensive?
No, I don't. Well, how? Yeah, I just get. I mean, after tax.
I tell you what, this is what they say. They say his fee is big because he's got a good agent, which is true, because you have got a good agent.
I didn't get paid as much as Vanessa and Robert Elms.
Is that right? Because Bailey got paid and Amy got paid?
Yeah, £50 each a show. £50.
That's a lot for local radio.
Not for London local radio, it ain't. Come on. I mean, I used to get 500, which comes down to 250 art attack. I'm quite happy to say it. It doesn't compare to Radio 2. And I'm doing a show that's the gold winner year after year after year. Radio Hall of Fame, all of that. If it had been that, if they said, damn, we can't afford... But that's not true. They said, we're refreshing the station. A horrible weasel word. What they did was replace... You see, people said, oh, come on, it happens all the time, you know. I remember that week Comet laid off their workforce. And people said, what does he think he is? Comet laying off their workforce is a tragedy. When a company lays off one person, that's personal, and I reacted personally, and still always do. But anyway, as I say, I can expand to fill voids. I've been around a very long time. I was doing television before radio. I insist we call my career uneven. And
you interviewed me on the telly. Have we ever talked about this?
When did I interview you on
the
telly?
When you were doing 20th Century
Box. 20th Century.
You came to Radio 1 and you interviewed me because I was the producer of Roundtable.
I have no recollection of that, and forgive
me. I made.
I generally do not remember that. Do not, I mean, 20th Century Box, as I say, that's, dear Lord, that's almost four decades ago. And it wasn't the first telly I did. During Punk was all the first of that. And came to radio 8 years after that. You were good enough at, you know, to give us this shot at £70 a show with a kid called Chris Evans producing me.
Whatever happened to him? Well,
again, you know, the first thing he'd done. I remember going over to pub with Chris. I'd won the first shows. And because I'd been doing the 6 o'clock show in London and a few others, and a woman come over and asked for my autograph. And Chris was sitting there, and he went, well, I won't use the expletive, bloody hell. He said, what does that feel like? You famous? I said, well, I do a show in London. You wouldn't know. He went, wow. He said, that's incredible. She asked for your autograph. He was so impressed. 2 years later, I'm pictured coming out of a nightclub with him, and I was part of apparently of his bootlicking entourage. And from that, you get there's no business like show business. So that was the you and Matthew Gavis the first. But the reason whatever ragged style I presented them, which is kind of toned down, but not too much, I suggest, was I thought you just went into a radio studio. I had no experience of radio. You were good enough not to ask me to have. And I bought in a box of records, and I thought you just made a show up. And I knew I could do that. And I remember going out with you afterwards, you famously, you tried to, let me go. But I preempted that by saying, look, if you're here to fire us, let's get that over with and all have our coffee and cake. So, well, hang on 1 minute. And I think it was Claire Catford who was on before me. She had the spot before me. And you notice this tiny blip in the audience. Well, hang on, let's see if this grows. And sure enough, it did. And then you created this apparent monster. But
So how are you getting on at Five Live? I mean, there's a station that's also changing.
Yeah.
And it changes around you. You don't seem to really belong to it. Feel like that?
I've got no natural station. I'd have thought two would have been, but they're too timid. But Five, I can only thank Five from the bottom of my heart. They just let that little pirate ship sit there on Saturday mornings. It doesn't fit with the rest of the station's brief. It doesn't fit any station's brief. The lingering memory of my football shows might keep some of it afloat, but it has now taken on this almost... it's allowed to just be. It is allowed to just be in the same way that... I'm sorry, I haven't a clue, just has its own kind of logic going on there. And they never ask me what I'm going to say. I get there 10, 15 minutes before it starts just to say hello to Claire and it. They never ask me what I'm going to say. They never ask me to stay afterwards and discuss what I've said. And every year a contract turns up and they get on with it. And it is a wonderful blank sheet of paper, possibly the last left in broadcasting. People say sometimes, oh, well, they must. No, they don't. I tweet out the subjects at 7 o'clock, which is a new thing. Over the last couple of years I've started doing that. But they never ask me what it is or what it means or what we're going to get. And
one of the things that's really good about your show, which I didn't think would work, was the interviews.
Yeah.
When you first started having interviews, I thought, oh, this is wrong. I want Danny and the
audience.
Yeah. I don't want these other people. But actually, you've made that something of your own as well.
Well, again, I'd like to think it was craft, but it's just something I can do. And it could be exhausting just going on and, me and the audience with the subjects. In fact, I come up with 10 subjects. It's probably the most wasteful use in radio because we get around to about 3 of them. We take about 6 calls because the sausage sandwich game, which began as a 5-minute, 3-minute game, now goes, well, actually went into the news this week. Most people listen for that. And then there's the interview and then we pick up the pieces again. It's a non-format format. But the interviews, yes... I think most of the interviewees realise that it's not usual and it does drift into conversation. And if I just went through their CVs and said, well, you hit the plug, but we don't, they kind of come halfway into the mania. You know, whether it's Rick Wakeman or some Olympian, they tend to sit down after a while and think, oh, hang on, there's no traps here. This fellow generally just seems to... and some of the questions will be similar to what we've been talking about on the show. So if you're saying to either an Olympian or, Rick Wakeman or whoever it is, where'd you used to go pictures when you was a kid? The answer's pretty universal, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's part craft of being a pretty good interviewer, but also the idea that, we're just fooling around in a radio studio, which is the unspoken, undertow to the whole thing.
Now, I know you're going to have to get going in a minute. Stay where you are, because there's an important part of the show here.
The next thing I've got to do is put on a shirt.
I brought you a present from Cambridge.
Okay.
I'd like you to open that.
Okay. Now this... have you really brought me one? You have. Is it still warm? No, it's tepid. It is tepid. Opening up. There they are. look, a craftsman has done these. They're cut to a thou of an inch. A jeweller's eyepiece
so
has been on them.
So this is your own sausage sandwich.
Bless
game.
You, Trevor.
And what do we have in here? We have...
We have brown sauce.
And we have
red sauce.
And we have...
if you find, there's no sauce at all.
So, which one would you choose?
Every time the red sauce. You see, people who have no sauce at all, that they are lost souls who should be chased down with butterfly nets and locked up. I really think that. Brown sauce, I've always thought, just, you wouldn't go into the jungle with the people. I don't get that. People try and make a north-south divide. There is absolutely no information that proves that correct. Of course, there are two or three people who have analysed the sausage sandwich game. And online, you can find every wrinkle, minutiae, answer, impact you can get going. I make absolutely no bones about the fact that on a sausage sandwich, you have red sauce. On a bacon sandwich, you have red sauce. On an egg sandwich, you have brown sauce. And I will tell the audience tonight, the genesis of it came... The original sausage sandwich game is played on TFI Friday, which, as you know, I used to write. And I'm very good at... See, that's the thing. Another thing I don't get about radio. I'm relentless content. You know, if you said, Dan, the whole radio's gone down, you've got a field tour tomorrow, I'd rub my hands together, go, I've got plenty to do. And sausage sandwich game is one of the wasteful things on TFI to appear one week, perhaps not the next. Baby left, baby right. We had a baby falling left and right. Goldfish is going under arches. Even on TV, the football show I did last year at BT, we'd predict the results by two toasters.
Oh, the toaster. Well, I love the toasters.
Tensest moment of
television. They took that show off as well.
Oh, we did 100 of those, though, be fair. Me and Danny Kelly. And you can understand, you know, their audience do want, you know, Square George, should Coggins be playing instead of Boggins. We'll always do okay in that. And there is certainly a room for me and Danny to do shows. But no, we did over 100 of them, so it was a pretty good deal.
By the way, I noticed when I got this out, the brown sauce, that I obviously also don't use it, because look at the date on the top of there.
Oh, our corner store is like that. It's the 1st of September 2014. Yes. Is this from home?
Entirely on open.
The best brown sauce, if I might, is Hammond's, made in Yorkshire, and quite often I lament it on the radio. And when I played in Leeds, what was waiting at the stage door? A case of it?
Oh,
we do, we are. Thank you very much. And I should, of course, be declaring it on my BBC remit. I have red sauce all the time, and it did come out of TFI Friday. The first person ever to do it on the air was Terry Venables. Then Michael Parkinson did it. We did it on the phone on the show, along with all the other silly games. But as usual, 2 weeks, Chris said, right, that's enough of that. Let's move on. We'll do something else.
So one final thing. I once asked you who else you liked on the radio, and you said, I don't listen to the radio.
No,
is
I don't.
That
I
true?
I didn't grow up listening to the radio. I mean, it's, God knows. I mean, I'm aware of, you know, of course, you know, Kenny Everett and Peel and all that, and I knew them as people. Never heard them on the radio. And that is probably a good thing. I remember, again, Chris Evans, when he was, well, I was first, Chris was first in telly, and everyone was saying, oh, you'd love David Letterman. He made a point never to watch it. He thought, I'll watch that, and I'll think, yes, that's it, and I'll go down that direction. By pure dumb luck, I didn't grow up listening to radio, apart from what was on indoors, two-way family favourites, you know, the housewife choice and things like that. And all my comedy came from records, from the record library, the Goons and Hancock. I didn't know there were radio shows. I thought there were records when I was growing up.
So on your way home tonight, you won't be putting the radio on?
No, I don't. I don't. Not because I don't like it. It just is not. I put on. I've always played music. I adore music. And, you know, I have heard Peel, and I've since heard Kenny Everett. But I was we never had a car in our family. So it was never on there. Indoors, my mum and my dad ran the radio. And I was too busy, you know, between 68 and 74, buying every record in the world and finding them for myself. It wasn't like now, I guess, apart from Peel, famously, and a few other spots where you could do it. So I was never a radio listener. I wasn't particularly a pop music person in the late 60s. I was too much, you know, into the alternative stuff and the mothers of invention. So I never grew up really listening to radio, and which led on to this, probably, this whatever it is, a style I have. But as you know, it's just an extension of the personality. But I enjoy doing it more than anything. And the idea that I did music radio, you know, and I always tried to, it was never indulgent. I always tried to, you know, put hits on as well as everything else. But I do think that the dwindling band of us and, you know, Jeff Lloyd and people like myself, it's not bitterness. I'm baffled. I am baffled. And when I say sometimes during this, I can't get arrested on the radio. Radio goes out and buys special barge poles so they don't have to touch me with them. And yet people think, oh, it's because he's a lunatic. No, it's not. I may not be a team player, but really? Not even local radio? And if Five Live did decide, as they're quite entitled to do, actually we're going to use that couple of hours in the morning to look forward to the day's sport, as they're quite entitled to do, I'm not in radio at all anymore. And that's a fact.
Well, we would all miss your relentless content.
Well, now I'm now I'm going out to poop. Well, yeah, relentless content or annoyingly ebullient. Let's take your pick there. But the live shows, such as they are, and I must call them that, they are, yes, that is perhaps where I will end up, an old vaudevillian. Well, my first love turned out to be the stage.
Who knew? City of Cambridge awaits. Sir Daniel Baker.
Thank you, everyone. Bless you. I love the way you've actually brought a sausage sandwich for us. If I hadn't just loaded up...
The wonderful Danny Baker on fine form in the dressing room at Cambridge Junction last week. Do try and see his live show if you can. It's hilarious, and there will be more later in the year. Still to come on this podcast, Martin Campbell on the future of commercial local radio, if there is one. But now here's Stuart Clarkson.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. Here are this week's big stories from radiotoday.co.uk. We start with the incredibly sad news of the death of Steve Hewlett. As well as being a BBC journalist with programmes such as Nationwide and Panorama over the years, he was perhaps the best media commentator around. He used to do a weekly column in the Media Guardian and, of course, was the presenter of Radio 4's media show. Steve was diagnosed with cancer last March and had been doing regular updates on his cancer treatment with Eddie Mair on Radio 4's PM programme since the autumn. The BBC Director General, Lord Hall, said he was an exceptional journalist whose analysis of the media industry was always essential listening. And Radio 4's controller Gwyneth Williams described him as rational and informed, hard-nosed and witty, never taking himself too seriously, but unpicking the stories he covered with great seriousness. Elsewhere this week, UKRD's Local Radio Day is returning this year. It'll be on the Friday, the 26th of May, celebrating what it calls proper local radio. Other groups and stations are being invited to join the initiative again. More news of Stoke breakfast shows this week. Liz Ellis has been announced as Pete Morgan's replacement at BBC Radio Stoke, while there's another change at Signal Towers. Last week we told you Andy and Louise were leaving Signal 1. They've now gone, and Signal 2's Johnny Owen has also said he's leaving his breakfast show in the summer to move to weekends. He's been doing the slot for the last 14 years. Huddersfield community station Radio Sangam has got in trouble with Ofcom for sponsoring its news bulletins. It was running a sponsor credit before the news every hour, promoting a jeweller's. The regulators recorded a breach against its licence. And awards season has begun. The Trick Awards this year will see lots of nominations from commercial radio stations and people. Radio Presenter of the Year between Dave Berry, Emma Bunton and Simon Mayo. While the programme category sees Heartland and Breakfast and Absolute Breakfast go up against the Vodafone Big Top 40. And check out radiotoday.co.uk for all the nominees for this year's IRN News Awards.
Thank you, Stu. And just to go back to the news of Steve Hewlett's demise, do try to listen back, if you can, to the third hour of James O'Brien's show on LBC yesterday. That was Tuesday the 21st. It includes a brilliant monologue by James and a phone call from a lady in Scotland, which Chris Evans has described on Twitter as the best caller ever. It's remarkable stuff.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
Now, on the Radio Today website, you'll find a blog by Martin Campbell, who was Ofcom's radio regulator for years and now runs his own consultancy. Martin's angry about the government's new consultation paper on commercial radio. I asked him why.
Well, I think an overall feeling is that it's the inevitable. And I don't want to take a King Canute position in saying that deregulating commercial radio shouldn't happen. What annoys me is really the way that everyone is going about this and pretending what's going to happen. I mean, effectively, what will happen in the... as a result of this, and I'm not sure that the consultation will have much of an effect on the result of it, is that local commercial radio will be able to do what it wants as far as content is concerned, as long as they chuck in a little bit of local news and info, and that's it, Ed. And it bothers me because there are a couple of downsides to this. One is that I think that the local DJ will become an endangered species. And also, although there is an inevitability about it, you know, I think it is a bit mad, bad and sad.
I said last week on this podcast that I expected that a lot of people would lose their jobs and a few people would make a lot more money. Do you think that's about right?
Yeah, I think you go to the top of the tree. Your teddy bear goes up the ladder there, Trevor. I think that's exactly what will happen.
Let's look on the positive side for a second. Is this good news for community radio?
No, I don't think it'll make any difference to community radio. The local information and content on commercial radio generally, apart from in certain areas, particularly in Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland, by and large has just dwindled around to a rather pathetic situation. So community radio have had an opportunity in theory to almost take over the mantle from local commercial radio. But unfortunately, I mean, a lot of the regulation that surrounds them, never mind the small amount of regulation that surrounds local commercial radio, the amount of regulation that is surrounding community radio is making life very difficult for them and very difficult for them to sort of step up to the plate.
How do you feel about the argument that you do hear, which says these people who've got these networks of local radio stations, they all applied for the licence saying that they would do lots of local content? Is this, I'm not saying this is fraudulent, but in a way, is this fair?
No, it's grossly unfair. And if I'd been someone who spent a lot of money trying to get a licence only to see it taken by someone who made rash promises that now they don't have to keep, I would be very annoyed indeed, very much so, and would be questioning what this consultation, for a start, takes away Ofcom's duty to ensure variety on radio. But it also brings into question, I think, Ofcom's duty to make best use of the spectrum, because I'm not sure it will really do that, because we know what we're going to finish up with. We'll finish up with, you know, some big groups and one or two local stations that the big groups are not interested in.
So we're not going to get the diversity and the extension of choice and all the things that were always promised every time more licences were issued?
Well, no, because what this does is effectively take away Ofcom's duty to provide variety so people can, you know, play what they want. I mean, I thought it was very interesting that I think Matt Hancock has been briefed very strangely on this, but not surprisingly. You know, he's trotted out things like, you know, regulation says what music a station must play and when. Well, of course it doesn't. It's, you know, it's never done that. And, you know, he's saying things, you know, this will strengthen the protection of core public service purposes. Well, of course it won't. It will effectively take them away. And I'm still at a little bit of a loss to understand this limiting of the ability of commercial radio to innovate because of regulation. Well, where's that come from? You know, I never got many calls when I was at Ofcom from people saying, you know, I've got this really creative idea, but, you know, your regulation is stopping it.
There is, of course, another point of view, isn't there, which is, well, why does the government need to get involved with this at all in these days of internet and streaming services and what have you? Why doesn't the government just leave it alone and let the market decide?
Oh, very good argument. And I felt it was a shame when Ofcom was told that it could change the way that licences were awarded. I had hoped that it would go for really big changes and effectively auction licences off, which is, you know, almost what we've come to through the back door. We've auctioned them off without anyone paying for them. And, you know, that's the sort of frustration of the situation, as it were. I don't think that they should get involved in this. And I think that they should have been auctioned off, and then people can do exactly what they want, rather than, you know, have local radio just dwindle on the vine, just piecemeal snipping bits off here, there, until we get to the point where, as you say, people have made all these promises about what they're going to do. And what are they going to do? Be handed the licenses in perpetuity, or what's going to happen? You know, I suspect it will be unsatisfactory.
What's your best guess about how Ofcom will regulate the BBC?
Well, I mean, there's clearly an obsession at the moment with how the BBC will be regulated. Of course, part of it is regulated by Ofcom at the moment. The sort of harm and offence stuff is regulated by Ofcom. I think where it will now be a little bit difficult is if commercial radio effectively have these regulations swept away and can do virtually what they want, and that they'll be dancing on the points of pins about, you know, what local news is and where it has to come from and how long it has to be and whether it's got to be interesting and all this sort of stuff. Once commercial radio just grabs the very young, most lucrative audience, then, you know, that will affect, in turn, the BBC's duties. And who are they supposed to be entertaining and serving with their licenses? Because, you know, they're in a bit of a mess at the moment when you look at Radio 2 and, you know, some of the programming there, and you wonder, you know, well, you've got, you know, young personalities trying to play music to mature audiences, and it's all a little bit of a mess. So I don't think Ofcom are making it any easier for themselves by doing this at this time with the BBC. But, you know, I mean, they will regulate the BBC probably in much the same way as the BBC trusted, only with, you know, lots more people, and putting David Cameron's bonfire of regulators into perspective.
Yeah, they'll be draining that swamp.
That's right.
Martin, what do you think, though, to the argument that will be being made by people listening to this, saying, well, he would say that. He's just a sour-faced old man saying things ain't what they used to be and they were great in the old days. Well, of course, were they that great in the old days?
Well, yes, there were, but I don't like to think that I'm an old man looking back and trying to bring back, you know, golden ages now, because it is different. The landscape is different. But my point is, with this, this is just handing over stuff to big groups to make more money and make more cuts and do less content without any thought of to what the landscape will be when the dust settles on it. And that's what bothers me, that this doesn't appear to be joined up with anything other than Ofcom deciding after years of bleating by the radio industry, oh, go on then, go and have what you want. But, you know, coming to this, that there appears to be no good reason for it at this time other than to allow the same people to make more money.
Martin Campbell, thank you very much for talking to the Radio Today programme. And while I'm here, I know you haven't been too well recently, so we wish you well, literally. Hope you get better soon. And thanks a lot for your contribution.
You're very kind, Trevor. Thank you very much. And I look to see your teddy bear go even further up the ladder.
Thank you. That was Martin Campbell. Here's another former regulator. It's David Lloyd.
100 years of radio.
Happy 35th anniversary this week to Little Murray Firth Radio in Inverness. And let's pause to enjoy one of their most celebrated moments.
Now then, Len is out with the radio car this morning in Forres.
I'm at Lee and Coyle Hospital, just on the edge of Forres. And I'm sitting beside Jimmy Innes, who is 100 today. Amazing. We've just opened the telegram from the Queen. Jimmy, how do you feel this morning, now that you're 100? How do you feel? How do you feel this morning? You're 100 today. You're looking very well. Are you keeping fine? That's good. You've just opened your telegram from the Queen. Did you think you would get it? You got the military medal in 1916. Do you remember that? Do you remember getting the military medal in 1916?
We need more of that stuff, don't we? Murray Firth Radio, launching this week in 82.
Hello, I'm Dave Cochran. I'll be here every morning, Monday to Friday, for the breakfast show. And it's really great to have you along on Murray Firth Radio. And the message in Barbara Dixon's record really sums it all up for today and for the rest of your life on Murray Firth Radio.
And former lorry driver, the famous Titch McCooey, stayed there 33 years. Last week in our hastily invented Lessons in Broadcasting spot, it was all about making sure your mic is down when you swear, or preferably don't swear at all when you're in a studio. But faders up when they should be down caused problems even when mouths were closed. This week, 5 years ago, at Jazz FM. I wish I was still a regulator when that complaint came through. Stories generated by radio's deceivingly intimate approach often make the news, and they certainly did last week, thanks to the interview on City Talk with UKIP's leader Paul Nuttall.
I haven't lost anyone who was a close personal friend. There was people who I knew through football and things like that.
But I basically went to your website last night, search for Hillsborough, and it's paulnuttall.mep.com. yeah. to your website.
Well, I'm sorry about that. But
and 42 years ago, a new Conservative Party leader chose radio for her first interview.
It's just a week now since the political world was shaken up with the news that a woman was to lead one of Britain's major political parties. Mrs. Margaret Thatcher emerged triumphant from the second ballot for the leadership of the Conservatives after 2 weeks of battling with the then leader, Mr. Heath, and, of course, other prominent elder statesmen. Well, since then, Mrs. Thatcher has had little to say in public, choosing instead to turn her mind to future policies and picking her shadow cabinet, which indeed she announced last night. However, today she's with me in the studio preparing to talk about the victory and indeed about the future that we can expect from the new style Conservative Party. First of all, nice to have you back again, Margaret.
It's very nice to be back. I thoroughly enjoy these programmes and look forward to being on them frequently.
Good. Now, as I said, it's a week...
Margaret Thatcher speaking to Jimmy Young on Radio 2 this week in 75. Radio also made the headlines this week last year for more unfortunate reasons.
So, one of the BBC's longest-serving DJs, Tony Blackburn, has been sacked because the evidence he gave to an inquiry by Dame Janet Smith into the activities of the late Jimmy Savile contradicted the official corporation version of events. We know that. Tony Blackburn says Dame Janet's report, which is...
And whilst Tony was unwelcome, for a time at least, at Broadcasting House, he was still on air at KMFM and even sent a special recorded message to play just before his recorded programme aired.
Hi, everyone. Just want to say thank you very much indeed for all your support this week. And thanks very much to everybody at KMFM as well. It's been absolutely fabulous, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Of course, a great deal of water has flown under the bridge since then, and Tony's back at the BBC.
Tony Blackburn's New Year's Eve Soul Party.
Indeed it is. It's New Year's Eve, and what do you know? Good law. I'm back. First I was afraid,
I was petrified. Welcome home, sir. 29 years ago this week, a new host on the Radio 1 Top 40.
The official Top 40 in stereo FM. Britain's favourite Radio 1.
Good afternoon, this is Mark Goodyear for Bruno Brooks with the UK Top 40. The up-to-the-minute information is just in from Gallup headquarters, making the new Top 40 the world's fastest and most accurate chart. Now you, together with the stars, discover where their records are in Radio 1's official UK chart. Fresh off the computer come the climbers, the new entries, and will Kylie Minogue still be number one? Stay tuned to find out. Down 18 places to number 40.
Mark Goodyear on the Radio 1 Top 40 this week in 88. He took it over himself 3 years later. And we should insert a golden 50-year spot in every Radio Moments this year, because 1967 saw rather too many launches and closures. This week, Britain Radio closed. It had been set up on a ship in the North Sea by a Texas car dealer.
From 1965, that's Gene Pitney on the bright new sounds of Britain Radio.
Testing
on Radio Britain, the bright new sound for the British Isles.
The easy Britain Radio, or Radio Britain, they never quite made their mind up, did they? Maybe the smooth radio of its day, with Pam's jingles, later re-lyric for Radio 2.
Music smooth and sweet here on Radio 2.
You can't really imagine Chris Evans playing that, can you? So, with MPs voting at last to allow Commons proceedings on radio 42 years ago...
The honourable gentleman may somewhat misunderstand...
Capital moving from 539 to 194 42 years ago...
Capital Radio, medium wave service, is now available only on the new wavelength, 194 metres.
The last letter from America with Alastair Cook on Radio 4 13 years ago after 2,869 episodes. Do you count your programmes?
Propped up there against my usual three pillows.
The launch of the first English commercial station outside London 43 years ago.
It's 6 o'clock. Good morning. This is Brian...
And Kelvin McKenzie, then chief executive of the Wireless Group, challenging the accuracy of radar 12 years ago. Those are this week's...
Radio!
Thank you, David Lloyd, Danny Baker, Martin Campbell, Stu Clarkson, and of course you for listening. I've been Trevor Dan. This has been a TDC production. Keep up with all the news at radiotoday.co.uk and on In Radio. We'll have another podcast next week. Cheers.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.